Good morning, Copenhagen.
Hey.
So, my name's Joel Jeffrey from JFDI Phoenix, and I train for Firebrand Training. This morning, we're going to have a look at building a SharePoint 2013 farm on Microsoft Azure. So, SharePoint on-premise in the cloud. Now, it's called on-premise in the cloud because you can stick it in the cloud using Office 365, and that's a great solution, and that works for so many different kinds of scenarios. But then there's the odd cases where you need to do it yourself, you need to roll your own. And that's where this session comes in. So this morning we're going to have a look at the prerequisites before you go and install SharePoint in Azure. Who's already used Azure to install anything? Show of hands. Hey, who's put SharePoint in the cloud using Azure? Ah, okay. So we're going to have a look at the prereqs. Then there's a demo. Actually, I've got a confession. My demo takes slightly longer than the 75 minutes we've got. So I'm afraid I've already started my script. So that started about 20 minutes ago. And it should kind of finish, if we're lucky, by the end of the session. But I've got a video that I made earlier of the script running. Hooray! So we can see the start of it. So don't worry, you won't feel left out. Then we'll see what that script does. What's the point of it? Some of the edited highlights of PowerShell. Now, there's another session on SharePoint and PowerShell. I thoroughly recommend you go to that this week. Then we'll have a look at why. So it's good to do the techie stuff before we do the reason why and the softer stuff. And then there's a quiz. And for one lucky person, I will be giving out this stylish garment. So pay attention. There's one question at the end. And all I've got is this in large. So if you're not large, then it's a Pyrrhic victory. Okay. So the scripts I'm going to use this morning, they are all courtesy of the Azure SDK samples and bits on GitHub. So I've made a bit.ly URL for you to get to it if you want to take a note of this. It's bit.ly/azgit/azure-git. And it's obviously it's not the real URL, that's up there in the top left, but quicker to type. So this is an open source project, and it enhances your various different scripting libraries, whether it's PowerShell or JavaScript, etc., with ways of interacting with Azure. So before we run any of this, there are a few prereqs, and this trips most people up. If you think I'm going to do this tomorrow, and this is the bit that tends to be the least well documented, but here we go. So first of all, you'll be needing the Windows Azure scripts and PowerShell commandlets, and you can Google it, Bing it, sorry. You can go to this bit.ly/azpssdk, Azure PowerShell SDK. And then this link up here, that will let you download the self-extracting setup, and it will install the PowerShell extensions for you. Next, you will of course need an Azure account. So this is my one. And this is it this morning before I ran the script. This is a fresh screen grab. And there's nothing going on in my Azure account at the moment. You can see it's pretty much zeros all the way down. Not a great deal happening. So that'll change. More prerequisites. We're going to need our publishing settings file. And if you're looking for this in the UI in the Azure Management Portal, you're going to be clicking around quite a bit. You can either go to, Bing it again, or you can go to this bit.ly, AZ pub file, and that'll take you straight to the download page, providing you're signed in. Or if you, having installed your Azure PowerShell prompt, you now go and run get Azure publishing settings file, that's going to whisk you away to a page to download your settings file. There you go. So this has got all certificates, etc., to securely allow your PowerShell scripts to run against your own Azure tenancy, your Azure subscription. So So don't forget to save it and give it a decent name, not this enormous long name that I've got here. So that's great. Next, we want to import this into PowerShell so that it knows a one-time action, really. The rest of the script, you know, if you come back to it tomorrow, having made no changes, then your scripts will still run against this tenancy, this publishing settings file. So you can import it using import dash Azure publishing settings file. Now, you know, what you probably, anyone brand new to PowerShell, who's never done any PowerShell? Hey, okay. So it can seem kind of opaque to start with, but PowerShell is very much verb dash noun. It's all name of action dash name of thing. So after a while, it gets pretty obvious what these PowerShell commandlets do by just looking at their name. And even further after a while, you can start to have a guess at what the PowerShell commandlet might be if that's something that you're not familiar with. You can also tab as well, and it will complete and offer you choices for what you've keyed in. So here it goes, import dash Azure publish settings file. I pass it in my settings file XML file, and then we're ready to go. Well, not quite, because if I try and enable things like PS remoting that we'll see in a moment, without due care and attention, now this is on my Windows desktop, which happens to be a Windows 8 machine, if I have any networks currently connected that are public, this is another one that isn't particularly well documented, then this is just not going to work. You won't be able to enable remoting, you won't be able to do all kinds of credential stuff that you need to in a moment. So you need to make sure all of these are private networks, and that might mean in Windows 8 going over to the charm bar for network connections and enabling the sharing option, or going over to gpedit and making the change there. It's quite hidden away in Windows 8. Unless it works very well using the charm bar, it is really hidden. So do crack open gpedit. Next, you're going to be running lots of scripts. Now, many of these scripts aren't signed. Now, if you want to sign them, fair enough, fair play, go and do that. Otherwise, you can, just on your desktop, that's all this will be, is set execution policy to bypass. So that means instead of only running signed scripts, instead of only running scripts that it prompts you, are you sure you want to run this, it's just going to run what you tell it to and run the entire scripts for you. So there I'm configuring bypass, and as you can see, it's accepted that, and now it will run my scripts. And now we're able to enable my machine to remote control others over PowerShell. So I have to enable dash PS remoting. That triggers a fair amount of churn for a few moments, prompts me if I'm sure or not, and then the machine's ready to go. So theoretically, I could then run PowerShell scripts against another machine with PowerShell on it. But here we're going across the cloud, we're going across domain, so I need to find a way of delegating credentials from my machine where I'm running my PowerShell scripts to the target machines. So this is possibly one of the hardest bits to get right. So we have to pass in the delegate computer parameter and tell it everything at .cloudapp.net, which is Microsoft's Azure domain name for all the VMs we're going to create. That's their underlying domain names. And hopefully that'll just work, take a few moments, and then you'll get to this stage. And it's easy to kind of skip the next bit and think, okay, that's going to work. There's another little prerequisite to make this delegation thing work. And once again, you've got to crack open gpedit group policy editor. And you can do this with PowerShell and editor registry setting on your local machine. But your mileage may vary as to how successful that's going to be. If all else fails, then head over to group policy editor, allow delegating fresh credentials with NTLM only server authentication, and then make sure that's enabled. Then add servers to this list, and once again, it's that star.cloudapp.net. This time, you prefix it with the protocol WSMAN, all capitals, / then the star.cloudapp.net. So, exciting stuff. Almost there. Next, we're going to want to get our hands on the scripts, the sample scripts that come with the SDK, and that's available on GitHub. And this will link you straight to the page with the downloadable bits on it. And there's a reasonably good walkthrough there that's going to help you with what to configure and what the choices are. There's two main ways you can run their scripts. You can run them as a single VM, and it's going to create you the, you know, make me one with everything. It'll create you an Active Directory. It'll create you a domain control. It'll create you a SQL server and a SharePoint VM. So one of each in your Azure subscription. You can also run it in HA mode and high availability mode. I'll show you the config for that a little bit later after the demo. Now, if you try and run the scripts as they currently are on GitHub, it's going to fail when it tries to create the SQL server. And that's because over time, Microsoft offer new virtual machine base images on Azure. And we just have to update the name of the base VM image that we're going to use for our SQL box. So that means going into autoconfigure.ps1. This is one of the PowerShell files that you get with the SDK samples. If you edit this in your favorite text editor, we want to replace one of the values in it, I'll show you that in a moment, with one of these choices here. Now, you could go with SQL Server 2012, Service Pack 1, any of these base images. For the example I'm going to do, I'm going to go with 2008 R2, Service Pack 2 on Server 2008 R2. And the reason for that is there's certain things in the script at this point in its development that depend upon some of the location of log files, etc., in that base VM. Now, that's going to change. If you have a look at the issues log on the Azure SDK bits, you'll notice that's a problem that's in flight at the moment that they're about to fix. So our workaround is relatively straightforward. Head over to autoconfigure.ps1, and we change this one line here and paste in SQL Server 2012 SP1 Enterprise on WS Windows Server 2008 R2. And that's pretty much the only change I need to make to these scripts in order to have it provision a brand new SharePoint farm with, you know, not very much typing. So then we can launch our test script. So this is going to run master-deployment-script.ps1. That's what the file's called that kicks off the entire process. And then it takes a little while. So let's have a look at a couple of things. First of all, this is where my script has got to at the moment. So that's saying it's been running for about 23 minutes. So there's a fair way still to go on that. So let me show you how this all started. So here is the Azure PowerShell console. And yeah, I'm cheating. I'm going to hit play. And there you go, I'm typing. And now it's hands-free. So now it's going to run this script in the background. And you can see that was just the other night at 7:30 in the evening. And it took a while to run. That was about 90 minutes of continuous churning. And over the course of running the script, you'll see your Azure subscription fill up with extra VMs. So we can, that's the beauty of having videoed this. I can just speed it up. You can't do this in the real world. That would be cool. So rather than make you watch all of this, I thought we'd just watch this for the rest of the show. No, okay. Let's get rid of that. And back to here. So that's running away in the background. So what's it actually doing? So as I mentioned, the script that kicks it all off is this master deployment script .ps1. And that launches another PowerShell function that they've written, auto-configure, and that takes a variety of different arguments. So if you want to specify which of the two templates to use, you've got the single VMs one, and you've got the high availability one. You can also tell it which data center to use, and we're using West Europe, which is hopefully there's also North Europe one, which is probably closer, but that was closest on Sunday night, so that's what I used. There are other arguments you can provide, so admin account, admin password, that you want it to create for you, app pool accounts, app pool passwords. So it does a fair amount of configuration of all the SharePoint stuff as it goes along. We'll see that in a moment. But it's at this stage, it's not as extensive, I'd say, as either adding your own scripts to the end of this or using AutoSP Builder. So who uses AutoSP Builder? Anyone? Yeah, of course. Anyone write their own PowerShell scripts? Okay, who sticks a CD in and hits next, next, next? Ah. Then come to one of my courses, sir. sorry. So this launches the auto-configure little function. And that does a tremendous amount. Well, it launches other PowerShell functions that does stuff. So picking out the key points here. First of all, we need to get a handle on our Azure subscription. That's get-Azure subscription. Pretty straightforward. Get, noun. If it can't find one, then obviously it's going to complain and bail. But hopefully it won't complain and it will continue to use the selected subscription, and that's going to be the one, the context for the rest of running this script. So select-Azure subscription. Moving on, it's then going to start creating storage for us, a storage container in Azure, and then create some disks for us from the base VM images, and then eventually create the VMs. So that's going to kick off new dash Azure storage account, and that will create us a brand new one. Now, if you want to reuse one, you're going to have to edit these scripts and do a get instead of a new. And use the name of an existing pre-created one. Otherwise, this will create you a brand new one with a pretty random name on the end of it. Then moving on, it's going to retrieve, as it goes along, various different images. Now, we saw the name of one of those, a SQL one earlier. There's also a SharePoint one that Microsoft provides, SharePoint 2013, with the trial on it. Obviously, after that, you could supply it with your own license key, which would unlock everything. So this retrieves the named, whatever that is, the named Azure VM image, and then it starts to build said image. It shells out to some functions in another PowerShell script called sharedfunctions.ps1, and here we use new Azure VM config. And this takes things like the size of the instance that it's going to build us, and all this is driven by XML. The name of the image that we've already grabbed, and then do we want it to be stuck into an availability set? So if you've got a single server in an availability set, what you have is a single point of failure. So availability sets are all about, at the very least, getting Microsoft, when they need to apply a patch, to bounce one server at a time. So obviously, if you've got more than one in that set, things aren't going to suddenly go offline for your users. So that's new Azure VM config. Moving on, we've got new Azure provisioning config that passes some of the arguments to which admin account name to use, what admin account password, and whether this new machine should be a member of a domain or not, and if so, what domain. All of that gets passed in to creating our new VM. As you can see, this pipeline gets built up to ultimately, if I just go back, to return this Azure VM config object. And they've also piped that into set Azure subnet, so it's going to place these VMs in a subnet of their own. It's quite cool. Also goes about, as you can see in the middle here, adding disks to our VMs. And then down here, we're going to add our Azure endpoint. so that the machine is addressable from across the net. Now, if you've got one of these, then you could ping the machine, you could, I don't know, visit it on port 80, you could RDP it, whatever. You can obviously tie down or open up those ports through the management console. Also, without one of these, you can't monitor to see if the machine is up. So it's a good idea to have one of these on every machine you want to monitor. So moving further down the file, here we're actually, this is the main event here, we're taking our config arguments and we're passing that into new-Azure VM. And it's that line that creates the machine on the Azure platform. So which affinity group is it going in? What's its virtual network name? And should this wait for it to first boot or should it just continue? Now, the way the scripts are all timed, if they don't wait for it to boot, then it's obviously going to come crashing to a halt a little bit later. And then this is possibly a little bit hacky. We're waiting 300 seconds before moving on to the next step. We're giving the machines enough time to do their initial boot. Also, I'm not going to walk you through the entire script file. You'll be delighted to hear. So another important script file is the one that provisions our SharePoint servers. So this is used multiple times in multiple different ways for different scenarios. So in the single VM one, this is going to run all of our SharePoint services that we care about. And it does things that you'd probably do in your day-to-day SharePoint administration. Okay, a quick wave from the SharePoint admin guys in the audience. Oh, there's some of you lurking. Okay, so some of these PowerShell commands you'll already know, like new SP authentication provider. You probably want one of these before configuring a new SP web application, for instance, www.mycompany.com or contoso.local or something. And then new SP site will create you a site collection, not a site collection, in our web application. So here on, we're actually in our script that's running from our client. We're running these SharePoint commandlets on our VM SharePoint server to be as it gets created. And that's pretty cool. All this is happening from one server. And in fact, from pretty much anywhere on the internet is where you can run these. So I am just anywhere on the internet in this room today. I've plugged the cable into the back of my PC and that script is running right now and hopefully provisioning a lot of this for us as we speak. So, as I mentioned earlier, it's also available in high availability. So, there is another folder underneath the config folder of the Azure SDK samples and bits, the high availability or the highly available folder that contains these XML files that drive the PowerShell we've just seen. So, the big difference, I guess, in this one is that in our XML chunk here, there's a Azure VM group section, and you can see what they're doing. They've got effectively arguments they're passing in to those commandlets we've just seen, and it's all driven through this config. So here it's going to create us an app server tier and a web server tier, and okay, you'd want to paste in the names of your images that you wanted it to use, so you can customize those images or use the stock ones. That's up to you. And it's setting things like what size the data disks should be, also what protocol the admin site, the central admin site is listening on, and so on. Then further down here we've got our web front end configuration as well, and here it's basically saying now we're going to have two endpoints that we require for, in this case, port 8080. For a particular domain name we can configure later for our web applications. So it's perfectly doable to create a multi-tiered SharePoint farm out of just these scripts. Now, what I'd want to do extra to that is then run the final pieces of configuration to say exactly what services are running, to fine-tune what services are running on each SharePoint server in the farm. So, for those of you not familiar with SharePoint architecture, you've got a mixture of different server roles. You've got web front ends that serve pages and documents to people. That's what they do best. And then you've got various quantities of back-end servers, things like search servers and metadata servers and user profile servers, etc. And you may want to mix and match which roles these servers are doing. And you know, it's a simple matter of starting the appropriate service on a particular server, and now that is effectively collaborating, being part of service X, whatever that might be, for instance, search or user profiles or something. So I'd want to run those scripts and target each one of those servers individually. But now we've got an entire server farm build scripted, so that all I have to do is kick off one script. Why? But why, Joel? So, firstly, the big one is scale, I guess. It means that if you want to start small, you can start small. So, this is a two web front-end scenario with a back-end database, perhaps. And then, maybe later, you want to add some more servers to it. So you run a slightly edited version of this script that adds new servers that a few minutes later pop up on Azure, taking on this extra load. And maybe scale out to something enormous if you need to. And that's cool. Now you've got external hosting that you're paying for by the hour, perhaps, and per server. And hopefully that'll meet your scalability requirements. Other reasons for doing it: you may want multiple environments, and you may not have the infrastructure on premise to do this. So you know, if the company that you work for, if their primary job is IT, then fair enough, you're going to have all of this on premise. But for many companies, IT is funnily not what they do. So perhaps they should, you know, outsource some of this stuff, the hosting of the physical tin, to something like Azure. So here's an example where I have a dev tier, and maybe I'll have a few servers there, so it's logically representative of the service we're going to run. Perhaps not a physical one-to-one mapping of servers to actual entities we're going to have in production. Then maybe in pre-prod I'm going to have a few more servers. Really, it's so that logically there is a one-to-one mapping between what we're going to be able to test against and what we're going to have in production. Then production should be as performant as it needs to be and as scalable as it needs to be, and probably not ever so much more than that. And yeah, you wouldn't need to necessarily run all of these out of Azure. You could mix and match, have some environments in Azure, some on-premise. If you needed to be agile, then that would be a good reason to have it in Azure. A reason, an often perceived reason for not having it in Azure, would be it's another network. How do we traverse that boundary? How do we make that easy? And yeah, there's an answer for that. On-premise in the cloud is the title of this presentation, and that's that promise is really from the VPN side of what Azure can offer you. They now do site-to-site VPNs, such that with a relatively few mouse clicks, so go over to virtual network, custom create, and fill in a few forms, then you can have a site-to-site VPN between your infrastructure on-premise and the servers you've just provisioned in the cloud. And then it appears as if it's just one network. Okay, so giving my scripts just a little bit more time to run before we have a look at what's happened. I have here a very fine t-shirt. So for those who are paying attention, here's a question. Which PowerShell commandlet enables credential SSP delegation? Anyone want a t-shirt? Okay, have a guess.
Enable dash.
Yes. SSP. Almost.
Delegation.
Oh, no one was paying attention. Didn't I get to keep? No, okay. There you go. Well done. Hey, close enough. So, enable WSMan cred SSP. I told you there'd be questions, didn't I? So, without this, of course, none of the clever scripts that we'd run would work against our target servers, and it'll fail. Okay, so let's see how my script is getting on. And it's still running, which is good. So that was a few moments ago that's actually got as far as creating our SharePoint server. So that required then that the SQL server before that and the AD server and all the networking has already been configured. So it's got this far. That's a good sign. In the meantime, I'm going to go over to my Azure account, and you can see that we've got a number of machines that have been provisioned. We have the SP all-in-one VM that's currently running and provisioning, so that one is being worked on as we speak. More of that in a moment. So let's go back to this video, because where's my mouse gone? There we are. If I move along over to close to the end of the video. So this is at the 90-minute mark, pretty close to exactly. This is the kind of final scene, which is very much what we saw in the browser just a moment ago. What I can then do is, let's visit one of these machines. So I click on virtual machines, I go over to my SharePoint server, and simple matter of hitting connect, and that sends me an RDP file for remote desktop. And then I need to grab the username and password. Now the username and password has been, well, the username has been set in config, the password has been randomly generated and saved in this output file. So I'm going to log in as the SharePoint administrator user, SP admin, I think. Yeah, that's what we've called it. So I need domain name slash username core dash, oh, sorry, slash SP admin. And move to the right place. And then grab the password and do the same. So these scripts, as I say, they save the output of that configuration so you can go in and find out what it's named things. And there's our server. And we have central admin and PowerShell and psconfig and all of those good things that you get with SharePoint. And first time around, obviously it wants to configure IE10. Here we go. So that's central admin. I can show you what servers are running on our little server. I say little. The instance it's used here is a 14 gig one with four cores, and then the SQL is, I think, a double that, and the AD is a small one gig server. So let's see which service apps are running. Now this is where you may want to further customize what these scripts do and get it to create instances of the services you want created. So this is a very basic web front end only with a user profile and search service provisioned. Not much more than that. So after provisioning these, you're then going to want to have, for instance, there are some proxy components missing there that should be there that aren't, that you'll want to provision those. And you'll also want to connect to maybe AD and import users from AD into the user profile service, so you can see their job title, their description, their, you know, all that kind of stuff. SharePoint is way more services than that. It's probably 30, 40 different services if you configure it on some more complex farms. So there is a lot further still to configure, but that in the space of about 90 minutes will get you a multi-server farm. So let's prove that SharePoint is actually doing something. It's not just central admin, and it's created also for us a web application with a publishing site-based site collection at its root. So first thing is I need to tell IE that, because this is on the server, I don't have to type the password again. So I'm going to just stick this FQDN based web application name into the intranet zone of IE. Otherwise I've got to remember the password and type it in again, and I don't want to do that. So this is hopefully the quickest way of getting there. And I can do something here that you can't normally do. I can make this take less time. If only I had that control on SharePoint service. Now this first page load, that's obviously IIS compiling ASP.NET pages and so on. That's why that takes a moment. Well, that's always been my excuse anyway. Then SharePoint caches lots of XML. So yeah, this is a publishing site. And that's hopefully a fully working installation of SharePoint. Yeah, lots further configuration required. It's a decision as to whether you want to create the VMs and then do something like AutoSP Builder or write your own PowerShell command, PowerShell scripts and add them on the end of this process. And what we typically do when we host SharePoint farms for our customers in Azure, we script them this way and then add custom scripts on the end. That gives us our best flexibility. So, back to the slides. So that's my blog site, joelblogs.co.uk. These slides and steps will be available on the Channel 9 site, and I'll put a link to it on my blog site as well. Video probably won't get uploaded, even though it's only small, but who knows. Before we wrap it up, any questions about what we've seen this morning? Oh. Last call for questions? Yes, sir.
Would you be able to make a divided environment with one on-premise front-end and several Azure front-ends for use of the same content both internally with local AD authentication and anonymous authentication in the Azure front?
Okay, so just playing that question back, is it possible to have Azure to host some of the servers of a farm and some of them to be on-premise, same Active Directory with a mixture of intranet content and perhaps public-facing content? Absolutely. No reason why that couldn't be done. So you would probably put essentially domain controllers as perhaps even read-only domain controllers in your Azure farm and yeah, have it synchronizing from your main domain, no problem with that at all. I'd go for the site-to-site VPN to make sure it's just effectively part of the same network, and yeah, there's very little difference. Once you got the VPN up, the firewalling that you'd have with the World Wide Web as a whole, that doesn't apply to that connection from your office to the VPN. So yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Any others? Yes, sir.
What about the Azure Active Directory integration with SharePoint?
Ah.
Without using the Azure Active Directory, well, the local.
That's a really good question. So the question was, is it possible to create a SharePoint farm in Azure using Azure Active Directory instead of spinning up a domain controller? And I believe at this time, no, that's not possible due to some of the requirements around AD for SharePoint. So I think we may well see in a future release that compatibility, but at the moment, I don't believe that's possible. Thank you. Any further? Cool. Well, let's just see how my scripts have gone on. Oh, it's provisioned the SharePoint VM and it's now creating our farm. So it's running stuff like new-sp configuration database and all of that stuff. So that's probably going to take another 10 or 15 minutes, but there we go. So yeah, please do fill in the evaluation form. Now, this is a virtual evaluation form, so this is via text message. Don't know if they mentioned this in the keynote, but if you text to 1919-1919, if you text the session code, and it's really important if you enjoyed the session that you put 555 followed by some nice comment. If you didn't enjoy the session, that you put somebody else's room number here. That would be good. please do fill in the feedback. Yeah, that's a novel way of doing it. I like that. So fives are good. Ones are not good. There you go. I'll be around for questions for anybody too shy to ask on the open mic. Thank you very much. Very kind.